Genesis. We're kind of doing Genesis chapters 1 and 2 concurrently as best we can, since these are, some people like to think that there are two different creation accounts, whereas I like to think that one goes into more detail on certain aspects of creation, whereas chapter 1 goes into a day-by-day, play-by-play almost, not entirely a play-by-play because, you know, there's so many things that go on, but day-by-day things. Hey, this is what's happening on day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so we've finished up, at least for the most part, day 5. There's one thing I wanted to mention about day 5, and I've got that on the screen now. Day 5, after their kind, we kind of ran out of time before we could talk more about after their kind. This is something that's mentioned on day 3 when it comes to the plants. This is something that's mentioned here on day 5. It's also mentioned on day 6 when it comes to all the animals that are created, after their kind. I went through kind of an easy idea of what that means, but it kind of does play a role in what we're going to talk about today, assuming we get to it, on day 6. And so, what does it mean to be a kind?
Well, you mean like after their kind, so.
Yes.
So like bird.
Sure. Okay, so.
Bird, type of bird.
So there are, I hope I don't step in it this time, but there are different aspects of evolution that are true. I'm not saying the whole theory is true, certainly not, especially when it comes to eons of time, but there are certain aspects that are. And one of those is where species diverge. And I believe, looking at this particular aspect, that the animals that we have today, many of them would be largely unrecognizable to those that were here at creation. There'd be some similarities, of course. I think that for the horse, the donkey, and the zebra were probably all one creature, one kind that God created, and one went to one part of the world, another went to another part of the world, and then they diverge, speciation, if you will. And so they had different things that happened there. That's why you can take a donkey and a horse and form a mule, right? Now, mules for us, they've separated so far that mules can't reproduce themselves, but you know, there is that thing that you have there. You have that possibility where they can reproduce. A donkey and a zebra, did you know that they can reproduce? It's called a zedonk. That's the thing. I've seen it before. They can reproduce. I'm not sure about their ability to reproduce. but that exists. So they have. So I think that different kinds of elephants, the African and the Indian elephant, right? That they were once the same creature created on day 6, and then they diverged at some point. So a kind then would be not necessarily how we would define species. We know we have. You remember the species, the kingdom, phylum, that whole thing from biology class.
I remember
about that. Yeah. And then the last three are family, genus, species, right? And so there are different ways in order, we classify them that way. Now, does the Bible classify a kind as one of those? Well, that's a big question. You know, it's trying to figure all that out. But they were all different kinds. Some have speculated that a kind is what we designate as family. In that structure in that taxonomic thing, right? In taxonomy. Now, whether that's true or not, it's hard to say. But there weren't as many animals back then. You know, we have 15 million different kinds of dogs, right, today? That's an exaggeration. We have a lot of different kinds of dogs. But they all, you know, the wolves, domestic dogs, and of course the domestic dogs, you have bulldogs and dachshunds and I'm drawing a blank now, different kinds of dogs. But you know what I mean? There's all different kinds of breeds of dogs. And so they all had one common ancestor that God created on day six. So you know, we have done the breeding there, but then there's such a thing as sort of a natural breeding where you have different kinds of things that happen that create different things that we call species today. And some of them can reproduce together and some can't. So now, how all that works, is a chimp related to a gorilla in terms of their common ancestor? I don't know. Maybe they do, maybe not. Maybe they diverge at some point. Who knows? But that's where that comes from. But of course, we don't have a common ancestor with any other animal living today, do we?
I guess
not. No? Because we are created special on day six. Day six. I've got a lot of verses there that talk about what happens there on day six. And so we're going to look at some of these here. The land animals are, of course, created. We talked about some of those land animals, the elephant, the chimp, the gorilla, dogs, different kinds of things of that nature. So different land animals are created. That includes all the creeping things, I believe, which, of course, we would call bugs. all these things are created on day six. And then we find mankind is created. And this is, you know, I haven't been really looking at Genesis 1 and having us read that, because maybe I'm taking for granted that we know that well enough. But there's two verses here that I want to look at specifically, verses 26 and 27. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. What does that even mean? What does it mean to be created in the image of God? Any thoughts?
Well, you'd almost think he created us to be kind of like him, although I can't believe we are. I mean, image-wise is one thing, but we certainly don't have the intelligence that God has.
Uh-huh. Is the image the actual thing?
No.
But he also gave us the ability to reason and to think in terms of figuring things out.
Right.
Yeah. We're the ones who use tools and think in terms of how to do things. Now, animals do too.
Yeah.
But not like us.
Yeah. So, I'll get to that, but I want to address the image thing first. When you're watching a TV program, right, something on the TV, and if you were to, you get angry at something that's said and you don't like it, and you throw something at the TV, is it actually going to hit one of the characters in the head? No, because that's the image of that person, right? It's not actually that person, right? Don't throw anything at your TV. You don't want to break it. But you have that thing happening, right? It's an image. It's not the actual thing. So while we're not God, right? We're not gods in that sense, certainly not. We're not like God. We are like God in some aspects. And one of those, now we're nowhere near as intelligent, we're nowhere near as awesome and holy as he is, but we do have some characteristics that sort of fit along with that. And did you have something, Dan, or were you going to, okay. Oh, yes.
A better way of putting it is maybe we're a superior creature.
Okay. And so there's the idea. Did he say that about the animals, that they were made in the image of God?
No, and he gave us dominion over them.
He did not say that about the animals, right? And we'll talk about dominion in a minute. But he did not say that the animals are also created in his image. So this is something that is unique to humankind, to humanity, to all of us. So then, we're not going to be able to solve all this today because philosophers and theologians have debating back and forth, what does it mean to be made in the image of God? So, you know, there's a lot of different ideas about it. But one of the things and one of the ways in which we can try to figure this out is, what's the difference? What separates humanity from the rest of the animal kingdom?
Consciousness.
Consciousness. Does intelligence do that? Well, to some extent, but there have been studies to find out that crows, for instance, are about as intelligent as a 7-year-old.
Learn to use tools.
So does that mean that a 7-year-old is not made in the image of God? But yes, Pam.
We have a soul, they don't.
Okay, that's another big thing. A soul. That's right. I do want to get to that. Dan, what did you say again? Because I think I wanted to talk about that.
I just said crows can learn to not only use but make tools.
Tools. Using tools. Crows can do that. Different kinds of primates use tools. Things of that nature. Tool use, yes. But of course it's very rudimentary. Of course that just has to do with intelligence. Yes.
Something that I've thought and wondered about.
Sure.
I don't want to get off track. In Genesis, it was like man and woman were in the Garden of Eden.
Sure.
And I kind of think until they partook of the tree of knowledge, we were kind of like animals. But then once we partook of the tree of knowledge and the knowledge of good and evil, that's when we became where we thought, and we...
I don't think that's true. And we'll talk about Adam's intelligence for a moment. Eve's isn't specifically mentioned, but because Adam isn't clearly intelligent, we'll see that in a minute, then it should stand to reason that Eve is as well. We'll certainly talk about his ability and his intelligence. He didn't have time to create a whole bunch of stuff before he sinned, but there is certainly a sign of his intelligence early on. To be made in the image of God, there's Apologetics Press has 10 possible reasons, possible things it could be, and it could be any combination of these things that separate us from animals. First off, we are capable of speaking. Now, animals can communicate with one another. That is true, and you talked about bees on Wednesday. They have that fun little dance that they do in order to communicate where the honey is, where the nectar is. Pardon?
Call the waggle.
Yeah. Call the waggle, okay. But, you know, they have ways of communicating, but it's not quite like we communicate, right? We have a different way of communicating than bees, than other creatures that can communicate with one another. The second one is... we can write. We can improve our education, accumulate knowledge, and build on past achievements. Now, again, some animals can do that to some extent or another. But we certainly, in fact, what did Newton say at some point, Isaac Newton? He said that I've been able to accomplish these things because I've been able to stand on the shoulders of giants. Because that's what science, ideally is meant to be, right? Where you stand on the shoulders of giants about people who are very important and very able to think about certain things, and you build on that knowledge. Pam?
There are lots of ladies that spend their time in Africa and talk the gorilla sign language.
Yeah.
They have basic communication.
Right, right. So, so.
While she taught.
Yes. And so some animals, gorillas, do have that ability, and thing, and certain other primates have abilities to communicate in that way as well. So that's not strictly the same, because first off, babies, right, they can't speak yet. They certainly can't write. So, you know, are they? What's the difference between them and other animals like that? All right, man is creative, they have here for the third one. Man is creative. We certainly create certain works of art. And sometimes you see that to some extent in some animals, but it's certainly not to the level or to the degree that we have. So there is that as well. And you can see certainly different artwork dating back to the dawn of time sometimes. We're close to it. And this is something that Luis mentioned. We have the ability to reason, right? To reason through things. Now again, some animals have some limited ability to reason, but it's not quite to the level that we have. So that may or may not be
what it means. I think the last year and a half has brought that into question, whether they really do have the ability to reason.
Well, we have the ability to reason.
Whether we use it or not is...
And we may not come to all the same conclusions about things.
Couldn't it be that the thing the animals can do is what God gave them so they can survive?
Yeah.
They need to survive, not necessarily making them intelligent or anything, but the instinct they need to survive.
Right. They have an instinct to survive, and that's another big aspect of that as well, where they need those things like tools. I mean, they use tools to find food, right? Animals often do. So that's another way that they can, and some of them are rather inventive or creative, if you will, in using certain tools in order to create or in order to get food. Another one is we have our free will capacity to make rational choices. This kind of goes with the idea of that. But we have our free will, right? Whether or not to act on the reasoning that exists or not, to do something or to not do something. So we have a level of free will that animals don't necessarily have. Here's the big one. I think all these animals that we talked about so far, all these animals have to some extent or another, but I think this one is perhaps the most stark. We have a sense of right and wrong. Animals don't have a sense of right and wrong. We have the ability to feel guilt. Is that on here? Conscience is the next one. So that's next. But we know we can figure out what's right and wrong. That doesn't necessarily mean that we always do what's right or we always do what's wrong. But we have some sense of that in our minds. Even the most godless person out there will say, "Why? I'm a pretty decent person. I haven't done anything too bad." Of course, usually that means I haven't killed anybody or taken advantage of anyone in a particular way. Okay, that's nice if that's your standard. But you know, it's good that they haven't done those things at the very least, and they do have some standard that they've created for themselves, even if it's not necessarily God's standard. So we have this sense of right and wrong. And I think somebody, you said consciousness, right? We also have a conscience, so that we tend to, if we do the wrong thing, we feel guilt. You know, dogs may look guilty whenever they do something that they shouldn't have done. But is that guilt or is that fear of reprisal? Is that fear of punishment?
Charges. Hmm? Hard to say.
Hard to say. Well, I think somebody did a study on that and said it's not guilt, it's fear. But, you know, and sometimes that's the guilt that we feel sometimes, or that sense of guilt is fear of the consequences, right? But a higher plane there for us is guilt simply because we've done something we shouldn't have done, regardless of the consequences. Now, some people have their consciences seared with a hot iron, but then they become more animal-like, should we say?
That's what I was thinking. I mean, there's a lot of people, of course, are good people and have a conscience and feel guilt. There are people, nowadays get more, it seems like, have no conscience.
Right. And some of it is a psychological condition. There are sociopaths and psychopaths and things like that, but we're not necessarily talking about those. Yes?
I think with animals, it goes back to instinct. They have a built-in instinct for survival, so I'm not sure they really feel guilt for doing something or fear so much as their instinct tells them that they have done something that they shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
More than actual feeling the feelings that we as humans feel. I think it's nature's instinct.
Right. And to some extent. And another extent is how guilty will a wolf feel if he mauls your face, whereas how guilty will a domestic dog feel? I mean, you can't really gauge that, right? But you can the appearance of guilt, the wolf is going to go on about his business, right? He's not going to care one way or another. Whereas the domestic dog will appear to have that sense because we've kind of bred that into them to some extent or another. That is, man having dominion over the animals and creating that kind of thing. So there is that aspect as well. And that leads to, did you have something, Louise?
Well, it was just something that popped into my head. We keep talking about feelings, and we've brought it to animals, we've brought it to us. That I relate that to emotions, too. And emotions as far as our emotions with animals' emotions. Our emotions are so much higher.
And we that's actually number 8 on here. Emotions. So and so there is that connection as well. They have a quote here from somebody that says, we have a unique capacity for worship, love, fellowship, and emotional experience. Whereas animals, they have some limited capacity of emotion, I think. In fact, we do see evidence of sadness. I think elephants, feel sadness whenever, or a sense of loss whenever they lose one of their whatever a pack of elephants is called, someone in their herd.
When they haven't seen someone for a while and they're so excited.
For a while. How about a minute or two? Sometimes you walk out the door and you come back and they're just as excited as they would be if you...
just because everyone left.
Yeah, maybe. And so there's an aspect of that as well. Pam?
I know a case of a person who died and their dog stayed on their grave till it died. Never ate, never drank, never did anything.
Yeah. There's that sort of a sense of loyalty that dogs have that is just remarkable. And so they do have some limited sense of emotion, but it's not quite the emotion that we have, not quite to that level. I mean, we might look at, and no one, I find it amusing that no one has yet talked about a cat's emotions.
I don't think it
has. Only one day
was. Yeah. A cat owns you don't know.
Yeah, that's right.
Down there,
yeah. Oh, man. All right, number 9. Man alone possesses a unique, inherent religious inclination. Is that true?
Yeah, I would say this.
Are we inclined to worship and faith?
Well, I think we're more inclined to realize that there's something much more powerful than us, or an animal does, but they just
live. I've never seen an animal build an altar.
True, true. And that's exactly right. We have this innate urge. That's why atheists are they have to fight hard to be an atheist, right? That's why sometimes we theists, if you will quip and say, "I don't have enough faith to be an atheist," because it is such goes against our very nature. Pardon?
Counterintuitive.
It goes against our very nature to deny the existence of something greater that we ought to worship and consider in our daily goings on. So this religious inclination, and then 10th is the one that Pam mentioned a while back. We have a soul. How do we know that we have a soul and the animals don't? Well, we can't measure it. We can't determine that from external things, can we? But how do we know that we have a soul and animals don't? The Bible tells us, right? The Bible lets us know that we are an immortal soul, that we have this soul that He has breathed into us that animals do not possess. Yes.
You just said, is the soul immortal?
Yes. Yes, our soul is immortal. Once it is created, it cannot die. Now there is, once the soul is separated from the body, then that is the body dying, but the soul continues on to judgment, you know, for good or for ill. Depending on our salvation status, right? All right, so any other thoughts on the image of God before we move on? So those are just 10 things that the folks at Apologetic Express have come up with. Who wrote this? This is Eric Lyons came up with that. Well, at least he wrote this. I don't know if he came up with all of them. But so there's just some thoughts that he has on it that I think are worth looking at. All right, so we are made in the image of God. Are we still in the image of God?
No. We're really flawed.
Yeah. All right. There are some who claim that we are not made in the image of God any longer. And in fact, they'll look at Genesis chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, and they'll say, well, once mankind has sinned. Once we sinned, that image has been lost, and we're not in the image of God anymore. And then we move on, and we see that in Genesis chapter 5, verses 1 through 3, that Seth was made in the likeness, or the image of Adam, the image and likeness of Adam. So it continued on. Now, was that stain continued on? Did that stain continue on of sin? Such that the image of God was no longer there. Well, consider Genesis chapter 9 and verse 6. What do we read there? This is after the flood, and the Lord is speaking to Noah. And do you remember the reason why the flood came?
We were... Mankind had become so wicked that God basically was going to eliminate us.
So mankind had become so wicked. That's right. And the wickedness that it specifically mentions in there is violence. We had become so violent, right? And so we note the progression of violence in the first few chapters of Genesis. In chapter 4, Cain kills Abel. Later in chapter 4, one of Cain's descendants kills a man for just wounding him, that we see there. And so this progression of sin continues on until it becomes so violent that the Lord says, I've got to do something about this. I've got to do something about this. And so we see in verse 6 that this is one of the things he's going to do. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. He's creating a consequence for sin, a consequence for murder. And then he says the reason, for in the image of God he made man. So, that's true, he made man in the image of God. But would that be a reason given for this consequence for murder if that were not the case anymore? What we find is that, yes, we're still made in the image of God. That image is tarnished with sin. That image is tarnished with sin. But we are still carrying God's image within us, every single one of us.
That's why we strive to be godlike.
That's why we strive to be godly. That's right. That's right. To be Christ-like. So that we can be closer to his image. That's right. Good point. All right. Then we have dominion over the animals. Do we have dominion over the animals? You know, one of the funny things, for the most part, unless you are outright threatening an animal, will an animal hurt you or attack you? Generally speaking, no. Unless they have rabies or they have some kind of other thing going on there. Generally speaking, no. They're not. They're just going to leave you alone. Now, you might have food, you know, like bears and the when you're out camping, you want to make sure your food is secure so they don't come in but they're not going to attack you necessarily as you threaten him, right? Yes.
Can we go back to image for a second?
Oh, sure.
1 Corinthians 11:7 says, for a man indeed ought not to cover his head, since he is the image and glory of God.
Right. Right. 1 Corinthians 11:7. Yes, so there are other passages that we can go to talk about the image of God.
That being the New Testament most recent.
Right, right. I had come across that. I did not include this in this lesson because, time, I mean, we're already. But also because I thought the closest we can come to the man's sin in the garden was probably the best passage to go to, but that is a good one too. 1 Corinthians 11:7. We are still in the image of God. And so that is a good one, yes. All right. So, dominion over the animals. We have that dominion. And in fact, we do kind of see that the fear of, I don't have that up there on the passage there. I think in, Genesis 9:2, and the fear of you and the dread of you shall be on every beast of the earth, on every bird of the air, on all that move on the earth, and on all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hand. So that's that kind of idea of dominion over the earth has been renewed there after the flood. So, but we're given dominion over the animals. We also see Psalm 8, verses 6 through 8, talks about that dominion that we have been given. What is a dominion? It's a domain, right? It's an area in which you have authority. Now, does that mean that you control animals to every extent? No, but it does mean we tame them. And in fact, we find in Job 41, I believe, that every animal has been tamed, except for the Leviathan. But we don't see Leviathans anymore, so we took care of that, I guess. But we do find that every animal we have dominion over them to some extent, and we've certainly taken advantage of that. We have GMOs. I mean, what's a GMO?
Genetically modified something.
Genetically modified organisms. Some people think that they're bad and wrong. Some people think that they're great. One of the things that cannot be denied. Well, first off, they don't always taste as good, but we do find that they are modified to prevent insects from eating them, from reducing the crop. They boost crop levels so that we all have food that we can eat, and we can balloon to nearly 8 billion people on this planet, which would have been impossible just a few hundred years ago. Do you have something?
I was going to say, you know, the GMO, if you put the insecticide in the seed to kill the bugs, you're also going to put it in the crop.
Yeah.
That remains to be seen how that's going to work out.
So again, there are some good things about it and some bad things, but we do have that ability, and we've certainly used it. We've tamed animals. How many different kinds of animals do we have as pets these days? I mean, it's not just cats and dogs, right? There are so many things. Now, some of them you want to be careful. You know, it's going to be difficult with, like, if you have a poisonous snake in your there with you. You don't exactly tame those kinds of things, but. But we have that dominion. We have that ability. Does that mean we have a responsibility?
Yeah, it does.
Does that mean we have a responsibility to take care of what God has given us?
Isn't that part of what dominion means? Not just authority, but, yeah.
That's right. That's right. We have a responsibility to take care of the things that God has given us. We are to be good stewards. Right. Now, granted, that term steward is used in different ways. We're stewards of the church as leaders in the church or as people in the church. We need to be good stewards of the church. But God has given all mankind stewardship of the planet. So we need to be good stewards. Have we always been good stewards?
No.
Certainly not. So that is... my tiny soapbox on that, I guess. let's go on. Instructions in the garden. Adam was living in a paradise, right? Was Adam told, "Oh, you're in a paradise. You can just lay about and have a good old time. You don't have to do anything." Was he told that?
He told to tend to the garden.
Boom. Yes, that's right. He was told to tend to the garden. How difficult is it to tend to a garden?
Very good.
Now, granted, it's a good deal more difficult after the fall than it was before. But you still had to tend the garden. There was still work to be done. Does that mean something about us? Don't we need to have something to do? We are designed, created to work, to do something, not to sit around on our backsides all day.
I think we're designed to have some sort of objective or goal.
Yes, designed to have a goal, a purpose, something to do with our lives. Perhaps another difference we might have with the animals. Their goal is simply to survive. We have often... Sometimes we're at that level where we're just trying to survive day to day, but for the most part, if we've got that taken care of, if we've got that on lock, if you will, then we want to do more. We want to take care and have that purpose and fulfill that purpose. So, all right. So instructions. We see those instructions to tend a garden in verses... Chapter 2, verse 15. Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to tend and keep it. His job was to take care of this place that God has given him, which is, again, an idea of stewardship, right? Tend it and keep it. All right. Then he was told... We certainly don't have time for this today. he was finding a helper, a helper. That's what the New King James says. To verse 18, it is not good that man should be alone. I would make him a helper comparable to him or comparable to him. Making a helper. Oh, before we get into that, I think there is one more instruction. I want to go back to one more instruction. I apologize. Verses 16 and 17, given instructions to eat freely of every tree except for what?
Tree of the knowledge of good and evil.
Tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, that's not just the tree of knowledge, right? That's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. How do you know, from experience anyway, that something is wrong?
Kind of been taught, are you evil? I don't know, but I think most people, you understand what's good and evil from probably your parents, mentors.
So you're taught that something is wrong. That's one way that that happens. Sometimes.
You learn from experience, too.
You learn from
experience. You stick your hand in a fire, you're going to get burned.
Yeah. How many times have you been told time and time again not to do something, and then you do it because you really want to do it for some reason, and you realize, oh, that's why I shouldn't have done it. How many times have we done something like that?
A lot.
A lot.
If we're still alive, probably.
If we're still alive, yeah, we've done it quite a lot, right? That is the that is one of the aspects of mankind. That's who we are. We have to sometimes experience that in order to know 100% whether something is wrong, why it's wrong.
And curiosity, too, is just another aspect of I imagine your curiosity. You build the cat, so cats must have some curiosity.
Well, curiosity is part of that. Curiosity, you know, why is this considered wrong? Oh, this is why. Clearly, I shouldn't have done that. But what do we feel right after? Usually, what should we feel? We should feel guilt for what we've done, right? And so, that is the knowledge of good and evil. That's what it means. Was there anything special about the fruit? We'll get to that in a minute, the fall. Was there anything special about that fruit? No, not specifically, not directly, but it was imbued with that choice. If you do this, then you will know. Then you will know. All right. Next time we'll talk about finding a helper. And this is an interesting thing. And the reason why I place all this on day 6 is because in chapter 1 we find that man and woman, male and female, were created on day 6, right? And we find in chapter 2 that she wasn't created until after he looked around, realized he was alone, named all the animals, all of the animals, and then she was created. And so we'll talk more about that next time.